Miri said it would be better if I were dead.
As I lack the experience to decide the worth of a life, I sincerely doubt that she has somehow obtained it. You tried to help the people of the market. You mostly failed. This is life. The longer you live, the more you fail. Failure is the mark of a life well lived. In turn, the only way to live without failure is to be of no use to anyone. Trust me, I've practiced. She sniffled, looking away. I have to become Vale to escape the memories, but I don't have the experience that she pretends to have. I haven't lived her life.
No, Wit said softly. You've lived a harsher one, haven't you?
Heroes of presents The Storm Pod, a Stormlight Archive podcast. Book 3, Oathbringer.
A quick spoiler warning for chapters 79, 80, 81, and 82. We're doing 4 chapters this episode. I know, crazy, right? I don't know how Jack's going to react to having read 4 chapters in a row, albeit 3 of them are pretty small. So please go back, make sure you've done your reading, and make sure you've picked the right episode. We wouldn't want you to get spoiled. Things are really gearing up here. This last chapter that we're covering with Shallan and Wit is one of my favorites in the series, so I can't wait for Jack to enjoy it, and I can't wait for you to enjoy this episode. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Q, and he just read 4 chapters in a row. He finally feels like a real boy. It's Jack. What's up, man?
How you doing?
Good. This is the closest you've felt to actually reading a book normally, probably.
Reading a book like normal people do?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So four chapters. I got to do 4. That's the most...
You might have done 4
read in a row.
You might have done 4 interludes, but they were really small, I think, that time we did 4 interludes.
Right.
Yeah. But this was like kind of a cool, intense series of chapters in a row here, right? So what did you think about it overall?
Overall, I really liked it. Mm-hmm. The events, you know, I have to say, like, the last number of chapters, there's so much building.
Yes. Yes.
It's just building and building and building. Mm-hmm. So, it will be nice to get some, I guess, maybe like some relief or release from the tension.
Yeah, a little bit.
So I'm waiting for one of these chapters to drop where there's like something happens, either resolution or, you know, it gets resolved in the way that they tried to defend the city and they failed.
Right.
And they're captured.
Or they, you know what I mean? Like, they tried and they succeeded and now, like, reinforcements came or something or whatever.
Something
to that
effect.
It doesn't seem like that, though, does it?
I don't know what to expect. I really don't. I don't. Like, Kaladin, I think, says a lot in here. He reinforces one idea over and over.
Which is
that we're not ready. We can't fight them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he still ends up forming an army anyways,
right,
which is like one of my highlights.
I mean,
the marching at the end.
It's Stormblessed again,
then,
right?
It's Stormblessed. And then Adolin's comment in the last chapter that we're covering today, his comment's like, oh, he's...
There he goes again.
There he goes again. He's probably their leader or something.
Yeah, right.
Like, that is so funny.
Amazing.
That's, again, one of my highlights.
Yeah, same, same. What did you what did you think about, like, the intense Shallan and Vale talk? First off, let me ask you, what did you think about the little twist that happened here with Vale?
What do you mean, which twist?
This twist where Vale assumed that doing this and giving the food up to the poor was the good thing,
but unbeknownst to her, it actually was bad.
But okay, so yes,
mm-hmm.
but Wit, having been there, describing a little bit of the aftermath
mm-hmm.
after, I think it's, is it Grund who gets, yeah,
Grund gets killed. Yeah.
So in the aftermath of that, they finally realize, you know what? We do have to form a militia,
right?
And we can't take this anymore,
right? Right.
So, you know, like sometimes, like it's complicated,
right?
You know, like Shallan is seeing it like I failed,
right?
I love, like, my highlight for sure of this entire batch of
episodes
of chapters that we covered,
yeah,
today, yeah, is Wit's telling of that story, reminding us all how intrinsic.
So did you,
and important let me ask our you, failures
I'm,
are.
I'm gonna derail this for a second here, and I just want to remind you, if you've forgotten, or just say it out loud for people who are listening to the show. Do you remember this story from earlier in the book?
I do.
Right. So Shallan tells the story to Pattern, but she tells it a mm-hmm. little differently, right? She tells it right. Not wrong. And I think Wit says that in the chapter. It's not wrong. It's just you heard it differently or whatever. And that mm-hmm. that story was called The Girl Who Looked Up.
Right.
But this chapter's called The Girl Who Stood Up.
Right.
And then he refers to her, Shallan, as the girl who just keeps standing up. She keeps right. getting knocked down, but she keeps standing back up. And I fucking love that, bro.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the movie Captain Marvel stole that from this novel, because that's kind of her thing at the end of the movie, right? Is that no matter how much she keeps getting knocked down, she keeps getting back up. And
right.
I'm showing you both my arms right now, because it's so wonderful. It's such a wonderful chapter.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. It's, I don't know, this, it was shocking to see the conflict within Shallan and Vale.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to cover it, because there's some beats in here that I'm not even sure if I got my head around it.
Yeah.
Because it was like, it was Shallan commenting on Vale. And to be honest with you, I can't even articulate, because it was too complex for me to follow.
It is a little complex. We know that by the time she's sitting and talking with Wit, when she's sitting with Wit, she's fully Shallan by then.
Yes.
And she's commenting on, you know, I think she says, she's like, I go to Vale because I don't know what to do. And she doesn't know what to do either, because she's not real. Like, she kind of admits it, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's so much to cover in this. Maybe we should just get started, and then
I think we should get started, yeah, because there's quite a bit. Four chapters. We haven't done this in a bit. Hopefully it's not going to be a terribly long pod.
I don't think it will. I think that the chapters are a little bit small here. So,
Chapter 79, Echoes of Thunder,
mm-hmm.
begins with our revelation is fueled by the theory that the unmade can perhaps be captured like ordinary Spren. Now, that would be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The unmade can be captured. Can the unmade be wielded?
Maybe.
Can the unmade become?
Well, we know that Fabrials are essentially that. If you have a fireplace right. Fabrial, like a ruby that gives off heat, it's because you've captured mm-hmm. Like a fire spren inside the ruby, and it gives off
inside.
Heat, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what this is saying, is that unmade can be captured like other spren.
Right. It would require a special prison and militia.
Yeah. Interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
What do we know about militia?
Not much.
Mm-hmm.
Not much at all.
Okay, so the chapter begins with Kaladin charging up the stairwell
mm-hmm.
beside High Marshal Azure, the sound of drums breaking the air like echoes of thunder from the departed storm, and he was counting the beats. That's my section under assault, he's thinking. Damnation, these creatures, Azure muttered. I'm missing something. Like white on black. And she glanced over at Kaladin. Just tell me, who are you? Well, he fires back, well, who are you?
Right.
So again, I like this because they didn't get to finish their conversation from before.
Right.
And then the action starts.
But the conversation's still spilling over into the action.
Right.
Yeah.
And one of my little highlights is coming up here where they both realize they can't talk. They can't resolve this.
Yeah.
And it just says later. Like, this is to be dealt with later.
Yeah, I love it too.
And one of them goes left and one of them goes right. I love this. This is definitely one of my little highlights.
Sanderson's done a really good job of creating a little bit of mystery and like this, like kind of pumping up this character of Azure. So that by the time we get to this part, mm-hmm. we're like, she's really cool. Like, you know, her men have said she's really cool, but now we get to kind of feel that too here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like her. And in fact, little highlight coming up with Shallan.
Okay.
Dealing with Azure.
Right.
Yeah, it's super cool. It's just it's one little subtle hint that Mr. Brandon, Mr. Sanderson put in, and it's delicious.
It's great, yeah.
Little morsel.
Mm-hmm. Yum, yum.
But it's coming up. Okay, the two burst out of the stairwell onto the wall's top. The fused swooped between them, trailing dark violet light, attacking with long, bloodied lances. I really like the descriptive text here mm-hmm. on this attack. Men lay screaming on the ground, huddled, holding up their shields as if trying to hide from the nightmares above.
Isn't that cool?
It's such a great description.
Yeah. Like
the men are cowering on top of the wall,
mm-hmm.
screaming. Kaladin and Azure exchanged a look and then nodded to one another. Later.
Yeah.
So they would continue their conversation. She broke left and Kaladin dashed right. And Syl spun around his head, concerned and anxious. Kaladin scoops up a shield off the ground. Also a highlight of mine. I love it when you're caught off guard. You don't have your fancy gear.
Yep.
You just grab something ordinary off the ground, mm-hmm. something to fight with. Love it.
He knows in this moment that if he summons Syl, it will fully mm-hmm. expose him.
Attract.
Right. And okay. he's not ready to declare himself yet, I guess.
On that note, I want to commend Brandon, Mr. Sanderson for masterfully being the dungeon master
yeah.
of his own novel. Because what he's done is he's put his heroes in a position such that the audience or the people playing them, if you're playing Kaladin,
right.
you think, well, I've already leveled up. I've got new skills that I can use.
Right.
Oh, wait. But under these circumstances, you can't use those skills.
Right.
Because if you do, it's a lot worse.
Yeah. You've literally you've sent a gunslinger into a gun-free zone.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like what's awesome about that is like we, the audience, are like, oh, come on. Like, just let loose.
Yeah.
But he can't.
Yeah.
He can't.
The restraint is so great.
The restraint. And so I want to just say highlight for designing this combat, this moment in Kolinar.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was designed to be that challenging.
Right.
Right. So I just love it.
It's like setting up a huge board and you're like, yeah. you have to start from here to there, but mm-hmm. there's also no teleportation. There's like an anti-teleportation field here.
Sure.
So you can't just yeah. skip the whole battle.
You can't use the force.
Sorry, no force.
Like you're a Jedi. You can't use the force here. You
yeah.
can't.
Yeah.
If you do, it could probably mean the death of everyone.
Right. It's really cool.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's well, okay. It's great in limited doses.
Like yeah, because controlled we bits can't of your have story, too much of know? This. We couldn't have a whole book of well, Kaladin being restrained.
I wouldn't want it. I mean, it'd be hell to go through, but
it would be harsh.
Who knows?
But who knows? Maybe
who knows?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what's in store. Okay. So pardon me. So he grabs the shield, seized a soldier along the way, towing him around and locking shields, a swooping lance clanged off of the metal, sending a jolt through Kaladin. The Voidbringer flew past. Again, I love imagining this.
Like a flyby.
Grabs the shield, grabs a flyby attack. Mm-hmm. Clang, he feels it on the shield, the very shield he just grabbed.
Yeah.
And it ricochets throughout his body, and the Voidbringer swoops by.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it describes how there's several of them doing this.
Mm-hmm.
He pulled the scattered remnants of the 8th platoon back together, while his own men stumbled to a halt outside the stairwell. These were their friends, the people with whom they shared a barrack. To your right, up, to your right and up, Syl shouts to him. This is great, too. Syl is telling him, like, you know, 11 o'clock, 11 o'clock.
Right?
And then he puts the shield up, 11 o'clock. Kaladin set himself and used his shield to push aside the lance of another Voidbringer who soared past.
Mm-hmm.
A second Voidbringer followed, rippling crimson cloth.
Yeah.
The way she flew was almost mesmerizing. Right up until her lance pinned Captain Deidanner against the wall's battlements and then lifted him and tossed him over, and he screamed, plummeting to the ground below.
Yeah. You know, when he...
Dude.
When Sanderson's,
like, how amazing is that?
It's...
Sorry, when
no, Sanderson, it's incredible. Yeah, it's incredible. One of the things that I find awesome about that last paragraph is...
Yeah.
Kaladin is now back to basics. Shield, spear...
Yep.
Men, mm-hmm. No powers.
No power.
And it harkens back to his time in Amram's army... When,
sure.
Now that we know it's Helleran, but a shard bearer enters the battle and he says, the reason why people have such a hard time fighting shard bearers is because they're mesmerizing. It's like a god took the field. And he's using the same terminology here. It's almost distracting to fight the fuse because they're so mesmerizing. I just really love the way that Sanderson has used the same kind of imagery.
Language.
Yeah, and language mm-hmm. again for Kaladin in these moments. Yep. It's really cool.
Sure.
It's come all like cyclical or whatever, right?
Well, I like that you're reminding me too that, you know, we're back to Kaladin in a different form.
Right.
Like, we've been here before with him, so it's familiar territory.
Yeah, he's Spearman.
He doesn't have his powers.
This is Kaladin Spearman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was still great.
He was awesome.
And did amazing
things. No powers,
things.
He was still awesome. Yeah.
Okay, so lifting him, so this Voidbringer tosses over Captain Deidanner,
mm-hmm.
screams and plummets. Next line, highlight, Kaladin almost broke rank and ran for him, but held himself in the line by force.
Because he'd be able to catch him. He'd be able to fly down there,
catch
use
him,
a lashing, and save his life.
And he almost did it.
Almost, yeah. Yeah, it's awesome.
It's awesome. It's hard. Like, these are really tough decisions. Like, I don't envy these heroes at all.
No, because he has to,
stay the,
in
stay
a moment's
the course,
notice,
stay
he
the
has
mission.
To weigh the pros and cons. Do I declare myself as a Radiant now and save some people, or do I stick to the plan and try to save everyone else?
It's unenviable.
Yeah.
Okay, he reached by instinct for the Stormlight in his pouch, but held himself back. Using it for lashing would attract the screamers, and in this darkness, drawing in a smaller amount would reveal him for what he was.
Mm-hmm.
And the fused would all attack him together, and he would risk undermining the mission to save the entire city. This reminds me, it's like Luke Skywalker saying, oh, I'm endangering the mission, I shouldn't have come.
Yeah.
Like, it's, he can't reveal himself. I love this.
Yeah.
I hearken back to what I said earlier about the DM design of this bit. It's delicious. I love it. Squads 1 and 2 with me, he shouts. Vardanar, you've got 5 and 6. Have your men hand out pikes, and then grab bows and get to the tower's top. Noro, take squads 3 and 4 and set up on the wall. Walk just past the tower. My men will hold here on this side. Now go. Go.
He's not even
so
in
great.
Charge.
No.
No, he's in this squad. He's just a regular dude, but he can't help it.
Nobody voiced a complaint, and they scrambled to do what he said. I love this. Mm-hmm. As all of this is going on, the shouts amongst everyone and all of these orders being followed, a human corpse slams down. It had been dropped from very high above, or maybe it had been lashed, and it only now just fallen. Mm-hmm. It's people being tossed, people being thrown, bodies slamming.
Yeah.
You've got this flying threat mm-hmm. up overhead, and these are not an easy thing to kill. In fact, we find out just how hard they've been to kill.
Yeah.
This is the first one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kaladin, man.
Azure apparently had warded off a few.
Yeah. She fought them and survived, fought them off, but didn't kill one. We get to hear that at the end here.
Mm-hmm. We can't fight these things, Kaladin says. There you have it. Mm-hmm. First time he says it. We can't do this. Mm-hmm. The Voidbringers attacked in sweeping dives, coming in from all directions. It was impossible to maintain a normal formation beneath the assault.
Kaladin has expressed this before here. When thinking about the Voidbringers, these creatures who are ancient beings inhabiting bodies of parchmen are very experienced at doing what they're doing. They might be thousands of years since they've done it, but they did it for thousands of years beforehand.
Right.
Him and his men have only been windrunning and using radiant powers for a little over a year. Is that what we're assuming? Maybe a year and a half max?
Right.
I mean, he's been using powers maybe that long. His men have, like Drahi and Scar, if they were to get involved in this fight, let's say, they've only been windrunning for a few months.
That's an interesting thing to ruminate on, because what you just made me think of is that it was conscious, like selected, meaning these ancient powers, these Voidbringers, let's call them.
Yep.
Inhabiting these parchmen, on a world where, at this moment, the powers, as you just said, are young, are inexperienced. Mm-hmm. So it's like you would select Roshar at this time, for this very reason, because it's weak.
Well, one of the things that makes it a little lopsided is in favor of the Fused is because the Fused have had experience and the Radiants now don't, but they should have the heralds to teach them and prepare them, but they don't because of how crazy everything went. Right. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the heralds are nuts now and they're not going to be of any help to anybody. So it's, you're right. It is the perfect time for the Voidbringers to come now. But I think that could be Odium's design, right? Because normally Honor's around to help. But there is no Honor because Odium was able to kill Honor.
Right.
So the one side is very weakened right now.
Right.
We can't fight these things.
We can't. That's what he says. Mm-hmm. We can't fight these things. The Voidbringers attacked in sweeping dives. Syl shifts into the shape of a girl and looked at Kaladin questioningly. And he shook his head like, no, Syl, I can't.
Yeah.
I like this, that she's like, come on. Like,
yeah.
What's it going to take? He could fight without Stormlight. He'd protected people long before he could fly.
Yeah, I love that line.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Long before he could fly, he was still protecting people. He started to call out orders, but a Fused passed by, slapping at their pikes with a large shield. A violet glow streamed from the creature's body as it swept around with its lance, wielding it like an oversized staff. Kaladin ducked by instinct, trying to maneuver his pike, and the Fused grinned as the formation disintegrated. It was male, reminiscent of a Parshendi, with layered plates of chitin armor, marbled black and red cheeks. Mm-hmm. I love the grinning that takes place over the course of the next few chapters here. Like they're like toying with their prey.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know that Kaladin is Kaladin Stormblast.
Yeah,
they
there's a line that it. Comes up here where they said, but it made a mistake. Let's get to it. It's like my
right,
favorite
that's
line.
That's coming up here. Yeah, you're right. Kaladin leveled his pike, but the creature lunged along it and pressed its hand against Kaladin's chest. And he felt himself grow lighter, but also suddenly begin to fall backward because the creature had lashed him. Kaladin fell back like he was toppling off a ledge, and the fused wanted Kaladin to crash into them. But it had made a mistake. The sky was his. So great.
It's so great, man.
The sky was his. Kaladin responded immediately to the lashing.
Sanderson writes a line like that earlier in the series, mm-hmm. right? He's said this a couple of times, but it doesn't hit like it hits right now. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he said it a couple of times before as a way to prep us for a moment like this. You know? It's so great, man. It's so awesome.
It's so good. Kaladin responded immediately to the lashing and reoriented himself in the blink of an eye. Down became the direction he was falling, along the walkway, toward the towering guard post. His men seemed to be stuck to the side of a cliff, turning toward him, horrified. Kaladin was able to shove against the stone with the end of his pike, moving him to the side so he whooshed past his men instead of crashing into them. And Syl joined him as a ribbon, and he twisted, falling feet first along the walkway toward the guard tower below. He was able to nudge himself so he fell right into the open doorway. He dropped the pike and then caught the lip of the doorway as he passed through it. And this is so cool.
Yeah.
The action in this is amazing.
It's so great, right?
It's so great and wonderful to imagine. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
When he swung out and let go, he dropped through the room, past the dining table, which seemed glued to the wall, and landed on the opposite wall inside of the building. He stepped over to the other doorway, which looked out onto the walk where he'd positioned Noro's squad. There was Beard and Ved, and they held pikes, looking toward the sky, looking anxious. Kaladin, Syl says, above. And he looked upward, and out of the doorway he'd come through, the Voidbringer, who had lashed him, came soaring downward, carrying a lance. It curved to bypass the tower, preparing to whip it around and attack Beard and the men on the other side. And Kaladin growled. I like this too, mm-hmm. the growling.
Yeah.
Doesn't just happen from the Blackthorn.
No, that's right.
It happens here.
That's
so
right.
I kind of like this.
Yeah.
I like these responses where these characters say, you know what? Enough's enough.
Yeah.
Like, I want Shallan to growl.
God,
I do.
I'm so here to hear that. I'm so here to see
I
it.
Do.
Yeah, let's do that.
I want Shallan to growl.
And then she illusions herself as one of the characters from the Cats movie where it's all awkward and shit. There's like buttholes showing and stuff. Worst use of light weaving ever.
Yeah, worst use of light weaving ever. I have not seen that movie. And
me
I don't
either.
Think
I just
I'm
like making
to.
Fun.
Kaladin above the it curved by so it was going to attack the men. Kaladin growls, dashes along the inside wall of the tower, pulls himself up past the table, and then hurls himself out of a window.
Mm-hmm.
He crashes into the Voidbringer in midair, shoving the creature's lance to the side. Leave my men alone.
Yes, please.
Amazing. Kaladin clung to the clothing of the monster, spinning in the air, dozens of feet above the dark city, sparkling with the light of spheres in windows or lanterns, and the Voidbringer lashed them higher, falsely assuming that the more height it had, the more advantage it would gain over Kaladin. But you made one mistake.
Yeah.
The sky was his.
Yeah.
Holding tightly with his left hand, wind whipping around them, Kaladin reached out with his right hand and summoned Syl as a long knife. She appeared immediately, and Kaladin shoved the diminutive shard blade into the creature's stomach. The Voidbringer grunted and looked at him with deep, glowing red eyes. It dropped its lance and began to claw at Kaladin, while spinning itself in the air and trying to throw him free. They can survive wounds, Kaladin thought, like radiance. That void light sustains them.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that these combatants,
how similar they are,
they mirror them.
Right?
Like, it's a mirror.
Mm-hmm. Gotta make the fight fair. Can't have it one-sided. You gotta make the baddies just as good,
too, right?
I don't know.
I think there's more to it. There's more to it. That's why I was really looking forward to the development of... oh, my gosh. I was going for some reason, the name Oren Ishii got in my...
Eshonai?
Kill Bill got in my... Was
Eshonai?
Eshonai. Yeah.
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 But Venli, you know, like... I you know what? I kind of want more personality, I think, from these...
Parchment?
From these streakers.
The listeners?
the Voidbringers,
They're going streaking.
I want more personality.
Right.
Unless that's not something that Brandon Mr. Sanderson is going for.
I mean, he's keeping them... at arm's length, I think on purpose. We don't want to know too much about them, right?
Right. Maybe he's waiting.
Yeah.
Waiting to reveal personality.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
complexity.
We just did, like, you know, a couple episodes ago, we came to the conclusion of why Adolin and Renarin barely talked about their mother. Because we had to keep Evie a surprise and a secret as long as possible.
Right.
Right? So,
oh my gosh.
Sorry, I didn't mean to re-traumatize you.
No, I'm still traumatized from that. Every once in a while, over the last week, I've been thinking about that scene, about her stealing away in the night.
Yeah, and then him killing the messengers, trying to make peace. Yeah,
I mean her. I don't know what you call it. Altruism, pacifism.
Her is
what killed her.
I mean her.
I mean it's complex because you can look at it in all kinds of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But, I can't believe it. And what's crazier is that it's just to carry that burden, that bridge that the Blackthorn has to carry.
Well, it's funny. He hasn't had to carry it until just recently.
I know. Yeah, I know.
So now we're going to get to see what happens when he has to recarry that bridge. He got to put it down. He made a deal with the Night Watcher and got to put it down for a little while. So we're going to see what happens to him. Which is interesting. But let's see what happens to Kaladin first.
Okay, sorry, went off there. Kaladin still refrained from drawing in his own stormlight.
Mm-hmm.
He suffered the fused lashings as it spun them in the air, shouting in the language Kaladin didn't understand. He tried to maneuver the shard knife and cut the thing's spine. The weapon was insanely sharp, but for the moment... leverage and disorientation were bigger factors, and the Voidbringer grunted, then lashed itself with Kaladin hanging on, back downward toward the wall. They fell quickly, a double or triple lashing, spiraling and screaming towards the wall. Kaladin, Syl's voice in his head, I sense something. Something about its power, cut upward, towards the heart. The city, the battle, the sky... they all became a blur. Kaladin forced his blade farther into the creature's chest, pushing it upward, seeking. The shard knife struck something brittle and hard, and the fused red eyes winked out.
The fused is an ancient being which inhabits the gem heart of a parchment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So... we learned about the parchment gem hearts. We learned about how they get to change them into these fused, into these different kinds of things. Mm-hmm. It only makes sense to destroy the heart. It's really cool. It's a really great moment.
And that's where it would be even harder to defeat the greatest villain of all time. No heart. Because the Care Bears have been trying to.
That's why he's never beaten.
all powerful.
Yeah.
Immune to care.
I love the fact that you're making a Care Bear reference, because a bunch of episodes ago we made a Shrieky reference.
A Shrieky.
Like for Care Bears. So now we're doing a No Heart one. It's really great.
A No Heart.
Yeah.
No Heart. That's taking me back.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a little mad, but let's step away from the Care Bears for a moment.
Yeah, okay.
Syl's voice in his head, I sense something. You know what? I love that Syl's there.
Mm-hmm.
Up and to the left.
Yeah.
And then she shouts, like, are we doing this? Like, are you going to use me?
Yeah. Let's go.
He's like, no, not yet. And then here, she's saying, she's telling him what to do.
I sense something.
She's saying, I sense something. Move your weapon upward.
Mm-hmm.
Toward the heart. Yeah, this is crazy. Kaladin twisted, putting the corpse between him and the wall. They hit hard, and he bounced off the corpse and then hit the stones with a crack. He groaned, eyes flashing with pain, and was forced to take in a breath of stormlight to heal the damage of the fall.
Mm-hmm.
The light flowed through him, re-knitting bones, repairing organs. It was used up in a moment, and he forced himself not to draw in more, instead pushing himself up and shaking his head. I don't know. I like this, what was it now? Re-knitting his bones. I love the playful language in terms of repair, but also re-knitting, like you're telling a yarn, you're telling a tale,
ooh,
a story.
That's nice. I like that.
Right.
You're stitching just, it together.
Something delicious about all that. Okay. Instead, pushing himself up and shaking his head, the Voidbringer stared sightlessly from the wall. But it was dead. Ahead, the other fused began streaking away in retreat, leaving a broken and battered group of guards. This really surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
That the death of one resulted in retreat.
Well, it's never happened. So they're like, what the fuck?
I was shocked.
What the
this.
Damnation?
Syl landed on his shoulder and putting him on the side of the... Sorry. Landed on his shoulder and patted him on the side of his head. Painspren littered the wall, crawling this way and that in the shape of hands without skin.
Right. The corrupted version. Kaladin's...
Right. Kaladin says again this next line.
Mm-hmm.
This city is doomed.
Right.
We can't fight them.
Right.
Kaladin thought as he knelt by one of the wounded and quickly prepared a bandage by slicing up a fallen cloak. Again, highlight, he goes from killing one of them to right to the surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
We might all be doomed. We're not anywhere near ready to fight these things.
It's a supreme reality check.
Yeah. We cannot do this.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like Noral's squad, at least, had survived. They jogged down the wall and gathered around the Voidbringer Kaladin had killed, nudging it with the butts of their pikes. Kaladin tied off a tourniquet and then moved to another man, whose head he wrapped. Soon army surgeons flooded the wall, and Kaladin stepped back, bloodied. But more angry than tired, he turned to Noro and Beard and the others. You killed one, Beard said. You actually killed one, Cal. Well, how many have you brought down? Kaladin asked, realizing that he'd never asked. How many has the wall guard killed during the assaults these last weeks? His men shared glances. Azure drove a few off, Noro said. They're afraid of her shardblade. But as for Voidbringers killed, this would be the first, Cal.
Mm-hmm. This is like that moment when Kaladin kills the shardbearer. And the men that are left are like, oh my god, you killed one.
Right.
It's so great, yeah, man. It's so, I love this mirroring thing here going on. It's so awesome.
The one he'd killed would be reborn.
Mm-hmm.
Unless the heralds set up their prison again. Kaladin couldn't ever really kill one of the fused. I need to talk to Azure, he said. Noro, report. None fallen, sir, though Vasilev took a gash to the chest. He's with the surgeons and should pull through. Good. Squad, you're with me. He found Azure surveying the 8th platoon's losses near their guard tower. She had her cloak off and held oddly in one hand, wrapped around her forearm, with part of it draping down below. Her unsheathed shard blade glittered, long and silvery. Kaladin stepped up to her. Azure looked tired, and she gestured with her sword outward. "Have a look." Lights lit the horizon. Sphere lights. Thousands upon thousands. "Wow, that's crazy." "That's the entire enemy army," Azure said. I'd bet my red life on it. "Somehow they marched them through the storm earlier today. It won't be long now. They'll have to attack before the next high storm, a few days at most." "I need to know what's going on here, Azure," Kaladin said. "How are you getting food for this army?" She drew her lips to a line. "He killed one, High Marshal," Beard whispered from behind him. "Storms, he took one of them down. Grabbed on like he was mounting a storming horse, and then rode the bastard through the sky." The woman studied him, and reluctantly Kaladin summoned Syl as a shard blade. Noro's eyes bulged, and Ved nearly fainted, but Beard just grinned. "I'm here," Kaladin said, resting the Syl blade on his shoulder. "I'm here on orders from King Elokar and the Blackthorn. It's my job to save Kolinar, and it's time you started talking to me." She smiled at him. "Come with me."
Yeah.
So great.
Yeah, it's a short one, but it's
again,
a really good chapter.
It's one of these chapters, but it's build-up. Yeah. There's so many build-ups.
Yeah.
It's a buildsies-upsies.
It's a buildsies-upsies.
It's a buildsies. But like several of these, again, all four of these chapters are really just building.
Yeah.
There's no resolving of tension, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't really get resolve. We get, like here, we get Kaladin feeling, wow, I'm Kaladin Stormblessed. I barely was able to kill one.
Yeah, we are overmatched.
I did. We're overmatched. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one.
One of the things it does accomplish, though, is it allows Azure to be able to trust him. Because Kaladin is truthful first. Who are mm-hmm. you? Who are you?
Who are you?
He yeah. says, "I'm here on the King Elokar and the Blackthorn's orders. I'm here to save
orders,
the city."
Yeah.
That's right. Who I am.
That's who I am.
Right?
Who
and then you? That's when she's like, "Okay, well, come with me." She trusts him now. "You've been honest with me. I trust you
right.
now."
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's your highlight for this chapter?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe just the fact that he can't use the... He can't use his powers because it will attract
the restraint.
The restraint with the Voidbringers. That's a highlight for me for sure. There was a couple other little ones in here. What about yours for this chapter? Echoes of Thunder.
I've always loved when Cal and Syl communicate in a fight. And she is like instinctively knowing what he needs at every moment, whether that becoming the type of weapon he needs or telling him the direction of the threats. I've always loved that. It's such a cool team type scenario.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And like
and
she
it's so cool.
He doesn't stab the Voidbringer with a large, huge shard blade.
No.
She becomes the tool he needs in the moment. Something small.
Right.
Inconspicuous, long enough to get to the heart.
Right.
You know what would have been really, really cool, and I don't think it happens? He has it in the gut, and then he reaches upwards with the sword to get the heart. It would have been awesome if she had, like, elongated herself to become a larger weapon inside to get to the
right.
Like it would have been awesome if she says, "Hold on, let me try something," and then she becomes larger, being able to strike the heart. But anyways, it's an awesome scene regardless. But
it's an awesome scene. But I actually that's a very interesting thing to think about because she has transformed before, but like mid. Like in between attacks, basically.
Right. It would be cool in an attack. Stab him with a dagger and it becomes a broadsword.
Right. Yeah.
Would be awesome.
Yeah, it'd be pretty great. Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah, it's a great chapter. But again, it's one of the leaving you on the...
Well, we get a little... You on the, we, for sure. Things are gearing up, but we it's great that we get another one right away.
I know. But again, it's another one of those... Okay, so if we're jumping right into it, this is chapter 80.
Mm-hmm.
Oblivious is what it's called. It starts with... Beato Mishram has somehow connected with the Parsh people, as Odium once did. She provides void light and facilitates forms of power. Our strike team is going to imprison her.
Mm-hmm.
Who are they speaking about?
Well, let me read
and
you.
And when, let me when read, are they speaking about?
Let me read you the previous epigraph. Our revelation is fueled by the theory that the unmade can be perhaps captured by ordinary Spren, like ordinary Spren.
Right.
It would require a special prison. Ba'ado Mishram is somehow connected with the Parsh people, as Odium once did. She provides void light and facilitates forms of power. Our strike team is going to imprison her. We have to assume these two epigraphs are connected. And that Ba'ado Mishram is an unmade that these groups of Radiance are deciding to try to capture. Right?
Right.
Really, really cool.
She provides void light.
Mm-hmm.
A source of the power.
A source of power.
That they draw from. Right.
So like Art, what's his name? The Heart of the Revel makes people turn into, like, you know, their worst lustful, gluttonous selves. The thrill gives, like, a berserker rage. So there are these things that happen around death rattles with one of the other ones. So it seems like Mishram's thing is to provide void light wherever she's near. So pretty cool.
And what a great way to think about your enemy, too. Like, just deny them the void light.
Right. So we have to capture her, and if we can, then that's one less resource they can use.
Right. Okay, so this chapter, Oblivious... Well, I didn't get an alternative title for the previous chapter, by the way. I did not get one.
Neither did I.
Oblivious, yeah, this is a complicated chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Grund wasn't at his normal spot inside the corner of the broken shop. The place hadn't fared well during the Everstorm. The ceiling was sagging. A snarl of tree branches had blown in through the window, littering the floor. And Vale was frowning, calling his name. After seeing the Oathgate platform, she'd met up with Vatha, who had been waiting as instructed. She'd sent Vatha back to report to the king and probably should have gone herself, but she hadn't been able to shake the eerie disquiet of her trip through the revel.
Mm-hmm.
Going back home would have left her too much time to think. And Vale wanted to be out working instead. Monsters and Voidbringers were something she couldn't comprehend, but starving children? She could do something about that. She'd taken the two remaining sacks of food and gone to help the city's people.
Can I offer a alternate reason for why she's not going back home? Because as long as Shallan stays out as Vale, she doesn't have to become Shallan.
That's right.
And what just happened to her at the revel was fucked, and she doesn't want to have to think about it. So she doesn't have to think about it. She can stay as Vale. Vale won't think about it. Because Vale's strong and savvy and wise and put together. And so I'll stay as Vale as long as I can because I don't want to have to deal with this.
Well, Vale, it says here, you know, Vale doesn't even want to contemplate things like monsters and Voidbringers.
Right. Which is exactly
like
why.
Grandiose. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like all this pressure, like this. No, I'm not going to deal with that. I'm going to focus locally.
Right.
And small. And here I have a kid who's hungry. I'm going to help him out.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna forget about all the trauma and just do something else.
Well, just, it's like, Vale still focuses on problems.
Right. I mean, her personal trauma.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
She doesn't want to have to think about all those cultists crawling on the ground with the sphere light of their rings kind of creating this eerie and that throbbing, pulsing thing on the Oathgate. She doesn't want to think about all that. She doesn't want to think about monsters and Voidbringers. So she'll just stay as Vale for a little bit longer.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Like, it's amazing how much, you know, all of what we've seen of Shallan is just her running away from herself since the beginning, since the thief in Carbranth.
Right.
Right at the beginning, like the City of Bells.
Mm-hmm.
She's just, that's not even herself.
Well, she later on in the next chapter, not the next one, the one after the last chapter of this episode, when she's talking to Wit, she brings that up. She brings up Cabsol.
I know.
She brings up all these series of fucked up things, right? It's great. It's great.
Vale wanted to be out working. That's right. No more monsters and Voidbringers. She could do something about the starving children if she can find them. Grund, she calls out, repeating his name, leaning farther in through the windows. Before, he'd always been up at this time. Perhaps he'd finally moved out of the building, like all the others had.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe he hadn't gotten back from the storm shelter yet, following the Everstorm. She turned to leave, but Grund finally stumbled into the room. The little urchin tucked his malformed hand into his pocket and scowled at her. That was odd. He normally seemed so happy when she arrived. "What's wrong?" she asked. "Nothing," he said, "though thought you was someone else." Vale fished a few pieces of flatbread from her bag. "Not much today, I'm afraid. I wanted to make sure to stop by, though. The information you gave us on that book was very helpful." He licked his lips, holding out his hands. She tossed him the flatbread, and he took an eager bite. "What do you need next?" "Nothing right now," Vale said. "Come on. There has to be something I can do to help. Something you want, right?" Too desperate, Vale thought. What is beneath the surface here? What have I missed? "I'll consider," she said. "Grund, is everything all right?" "Right, sure. Everything's great." He pauses. "Unless it shouldn't be." Pattern hummed softly on Vale's coat, and she agreed.
Lies.
"I'll stop by in a few..." Yeah, lies, yeah. "I'll stop by again in a few days. Should have a big haul then." Vale tipped her hat to the urchin, and then slipped back into the market. It was late, but people lingered. Nobody wanted to be alone on days after the Everstorm came. Some looked toward the wall where those fews had attacked. That sort of thing happened almost daily, so it didn't cause too much of a stir. Vale drew more attention than she'd have wanted. She'd exposed herself to them, given up her face. "Grund tells lies, doesn't he?" Pattern whispers.
Mm-hmm.
"Yeah, I'm not sure why, or about what." As she wove into the market, see again, wove, like, I don't know, I love it.
Yeah, it's great.
The light, it's... she put her hand before her face, changing it with a wave of her fingers. This is awesome.
So
I love
great.
How she I becomes love it, someone else.
Yeah, it's awesome.
She took her hat off, folded it covertly, light wove it to look like a water skin. Each was a little change that nobody would notice. She tucked her hair into her coat, made it look shorter, and then finally closed her coat and changed the clothing underneath. When she took off the coat and folded it, she was no longer Vale, but a market guard that she'd drawn earlier. Rolled coat under her arm, she lingered on a corner and waited to see if anyone passed, looking for Vale. That's the thing that I was thinking was interesting. So she becomes someone else, lingered at a corner, and waited to see if anyone passed, looking for Vale.
Because she had become the soldier. Looking for miscreants about, like, Vale.
Right.
She's diving into these characters so deep and so easily.
Yeah, it's crazy, dude. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that I had to stop and think, and I went, what? But, like,
wait a minute.
You were just Vale. You became a guard.
What the fuck?
Now you're looking for yourself?
Yeah.
What the? Like, I thought that was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, that's really, really cool.
Yeah.
She didn't spot herself.
She didn't see Vale.
So she was looking for herself, couldn't spot herself.
Yeah.
Though her training with Ishna and spotting fails wasn't yet extensive.
Tails.
Sorry, fails. Spotting tails.
I just spotted a fail.
I just spotted a
fail. That's good.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's good.
She threaded her... See, again, threaded, wove.
Yeah. Yeah. It's...
She threaded her way back through the crowd to Grun's shop and then eased toward the window, listening. Told you we shouldn't have given her the book, a voice was saying inside. This is pathetic, another said. Pathetic. That was the best you could do. She heard a grunt and a whimper. That's Grund. Vale cursed, softly scrambling around to look through a window. A group of thugs was chewing on the flatbread that she had brought. Grund lay in the corner, whimpering and holding his stomach. Vale felt a flash of rage. An anger sprang immediately boiled around her, pools that sprayed red and orange. She shouted at the men and dashed for the doorway. They immediately scattered, though one slammed a cudgel onto Grun's head with a sickening crunch. The men had vanished farther into the building. She heard the door to the back slam closed, and Pattern appeared in her hand as a shard blade. But she couldn't give chase. She couldn't leave the poor child here. Vale dismissed Pattern and knelt, aghast at the bloody wound in Grun's head. It was bad. Mm-hmm. The skull was broken and bleeding. He blinked. Vale? Storms, Grund, she whispered. What could she do? Help, help somebody. There's a wounded child in here. Grund whimpered and whispered something. Vale leaned close, feeling useless. Hate you. It's all right, Vale said. They're gone now. They ran. I'll help. A bandage. She cut her shirt tails with her knife. I hate you, Grund whispered. It's me, Grund, not those others. Why wouldn't you leave me alone? They killed them all. My friends, Taj. Quiet. Don't exert yourself. I hate you, he repeated. I brought you food, Grund. You drew them, he hissed. You strutted around, throwing food. You thought people wouldn't notice. I had to sit all day to wait for you. My life was waiting for you. If I wasn't here when you came, or if I tried to hide the food, they beat me. This is harsh, bro.
Yeah, dude. And it's been happening since the moment that she started. She's been giving out food for weeks and weeks.
For weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just made these people's lives worse.
Mm-hmm.
Or some of them.
Yeah.
Maybe not all, but how long, she's asking him, how long this has been going on? Since the first day, storming woman, I hate you. Others too. We all hate you.
Harsh.
She sat with him as his breathing slowed and then cut off. Finally, she knelt back, bloodied cloth in her hands. But Vale could handle this. She'd seen death. It was life on the street. Too much. Too much for one day. So you know what that is?
Mm.
Those few sentences?
Yeah.
That's the breakdown. That's Vale going, you know what? I can handle this.
Yeah.
A street urchin just died in front of me.
I've seen death.
I've seen this before, but then those ellipses, that's like, well, wait, no,
I haven't. Vale,
you haven't seen this. So it's that illusion getting broken, falling apart.
That's why the very next thing
next line is too much, too much for one day. She can't handle this.
She can't keep up the
you
facade.
You haven't seen this before.
Yeah, it's too much. She can't keep it all up. And that's when Shallan emerges. Because Shallan's the one who
sentence.
Cries, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Shallan blinked tears from the corner, from the corners of her eyes. Pattern hummed. Shallan, he said. The boy, he spoke of the others. Others? Storms. She threw herself to her feet and pushed out into the night. So, yeah, this, I love this with the others. It's like, you know, like when Luke discovers, oh, you know, that would lead them back home. Mm-hmm. So dropping Vale's hat and coat in her haste,
That's very apropos right there. That she, like, almost is discarding Vale. She drops her hat and her
leaving
coat.
Leaving her behind, yeah. Dude, I know, I love it. It's amazing. But you know what's awesome? Mm. Someone else knows more about the story. And it's Wit. Mm-hmm. So she drops that hat, and he picks it up.
Right.
Yeah, it's so good. Awesome, dude.
Yeah, it's good.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's so good. She ran for Miri, the mother who had once been a seamstress. Shallan shoved through the market until she reached the packed tenement where the seamstress lived. She crossed the common room, breathed a sigh of relief as she found Miri alive inside her small room. The woman was hurriedly tossing clothing into a sack, her eldest daughter clutching a similar one. She looked up, saw Shallan, who still looked like Vale, and cursed to herself. "You," the frown lines and scowl were unfamiliar. "You know already?" Shallan asked. "About Grund?" "Grund?" Murray snapped. "All I know is that the Grips are angry about something. I'm not going to take a chance." "The Grips? How oblivious are you, woman? The gang in charge of this area has had toughs watching us all for when you're next arrived. The one watching me met with another, and they had a quiet argument and then took off. I heard my name, so I'm leaving." "They took the food I gave you, didn't they? And they killed Grund." Murray stopped. "Poor kid. Better you than he," she cursed, gathering her sacks and shoving her children toward the common room. "We always had to sit here, waiting for you and your storming sack of goodies." I'm sorry." Murray left into the night with her children. Shallan watched them go, feeling numb, empty. She quietly sank down in Murray's deserted room, still holding the cloth with Grun's blood. This is, this is a short chapter.
Yep.
Oblivious is a perfect title.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, highlight is when she doesn't even know who this gang is.
Right. I love that. I love this twist that, like, she knew that by giving the food out, the way she was giving it out was to create attention. But she didn't realize that it's not just a one-way thing here. You can't just get the attention of the cult. Everyone else, all these other elements in the city are going to see you making... It's not like she went to Grund secretly, quietly giving food out to the poor. She was making a big show of it. She wanted to see the Swiftspren, which, by the way, Swiftspren is not an actual spren. They're called Luxspren. Our episode was released today, and I got a lot of Reddit posts about it. So thank you, everyone, for correcting us. They're actually called Luxspren by the sailors.
Luxspren.
But Swiftspren is the name of the superhero character in the city.
Right.
And and she was trying to make a show of it. So it wasn't really about...
And it brought undue attention onto these people making their lives miserable.
Right.
She was oblivious. She didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. It also kind of speaks to something else. You know, they became dependent on her for food.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than look for other means or, you know, like trying to solve the problem indefinitely, you sort of lean on your crutch. So it, like, it wasn't really a solution. It was a bandage, like providing food for someone. It's a bandage, but elevating these people to the point where they can get their own food.
Right.
That's something else.
It's funny because...
So it kind of made me... Sorry, go ahead.
Cal is going through a similar thing, but Cal is not keeping his eye off the ball. He's looking at the larger scope of this mission. And she says it later, I think, to Wit, that if she had been more like Yasna, or she said it before, if she'd been more like Yasna, she would have just stuck to the mission, infiltrated the cult, and not had done all this extra stuff to feel better.
Right.
It would have felt great for Kaladin to be able to save that captain that fell off the wall, but then he would have exposed the larger mission. And that's what sort of she did here. She didn't really put the mission at jeopardy, but she put all of her contacts in jeopardy. So
she put, well, she almost, I mean, no, the mission's still intact.
The mission's still okay, but these people are they are worse for wear now. Yeah. My highlight for this is that moment when she says, I can handle this. This is just life on streets. And then she's like,
what
the fuck am I saying?
It's
what bullshit is this? Like,
right. That is the thing. What bullshit? Like, am I really going to seriously keep convincing myself of this?
That this is okay? And then that's what she says.
This is who I am?
It's too much trauma.
Yeah.
It's too much for one day.
Yeah. I know. Highlight for sure. Mm-hmm. I'll join you in that for sure.
Yeah.
The dissolution of Vale's attitude towards this, mm-hmm. and Shallan coming out of it and realizing
the illusion is broken. Yeah.
The illusion is causing people harm, Shallan.
Yeah, it's crazy. Great chapter though. Great chapter. Let's get right into the next one, and then we'll take a quick break after this one here. So let's do 81.
Okay, so this next one is chapter 81, Ithy and her sister. Mm-hmm. It begins with, we are uncertain the effects this will have on the Parsh. At the very least, it should deny them forms of power. Melishi is confident, but Nay's daughter Kuzodo warns of unintended side effects.
Right.
So, daughter of. Mm-hmm.
We've heard daughter of too. One of the scholars that Yasna and Shallan read is a daughter of. But like, this is an extension of the last two epigraphs. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's been said that unmade can be trapped like regular spren inside a gem.
Like regular
spren. We are going to try to go after Ba'ero Mishram and put her in prison. We are uncertain of the effects that this will have at the very least, it should deny them forms of power, but they warn of unintended side effects, which we don't know. So.
Right.
Yeah. It's really, really cool. I like, you know, a lot of these ones in this part have not necessarily connected exactly the way that we'd like them.
Yeah.
But the last bunch has. Like, I would say these ones about this, and then the ones before.
Kind of stitched together nicely.
They have all stitched together. Yeah. They've been woven into a nice little pattern here. Yeah.
This chapter begins with, my name is Kaladin. I love that beginning. My name is Kaladin, he said, standing in the barracks. In the common room, which had been emptied at the High Marshal's order. Noro's squad had remained by Kaladin's request, and Azure had invited in Battalion Lord Hadinar, a stocky, bejowled fellow, one of Azure's primary officers. The only other person in the room was the fidgety Ardent who painted glyph wards for the platoon. Soft blue sphere light bathed the table where most of them sat, and Kaladin stood instead, washing the blood from his hands with a damp rag at a water basin.
Highlight for me here is that mm-hmm. Kaladin wants his squad, the men that he's bonded with over the course of these last few weeks, to stay in this meeting.
Right.
When they're going to just talk openly about everything, he wants them to be there so he can say to them, this is the truth. I've been lying to you a little bit this whole time, but I want you to be here to hear the truth of it. I really like that. I think it's really cool.
Yeah. Kaladin, Azure mused, a regal name. What's your house? They just call me Stormblessed. If you need proof of my orders from the king, it can be arranged. Let's pretend, for the sake of conversation, that I believe you. What do you want from us?
She believes him. She believes him.
Yeah.
Come on.
I need to know how you're using a soulcaster without drawing the attention of the screaming spren. The secret might be essential to my work to save the city. Azure nodded and then rose and walked toward the back of the barracks. She used a key to open the back room. Kaladin had glanced in there before, though. It only held some supplies.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of them followed Azure into the room, where she slipped a small hook between two stones and through a hidden latch. This let her remove a stone, revealing a handle. She heaved, pulling open a doorway. which revealed a small corridor. This is so cool. I love this.
It's really
cool. Like, secret.
Yeah.
And also, what a great thing to do. You have a storeroom,
mm-hmm.
and then have a larger storeroom off that storeroom.
Right.
Because most people looking into the storeroom would think, well, that's all you have.
That's all. That's it. Yeah. Oh, there's a secret, right. secret place. Yeah.
Right. That's yeah. great. I love it. You cut a tunnel in one of the wind blades, sir? Beard asked, shocked. This has been here longer than any of us have ever have been alive, soldier, Battalion Lord Hadnor said. It is a quick, secret way between posts. There are even a few hidden stairwells up to the top.
So cool.
They had to go single file inside. Beard followed behind Kaladin, scrunched up against him in the confines. So Cal, you know the Blackthorn? Better than most. And you know that the two of you never went swimming together in the Pure Lake? Yes, though I suspect the rest of the squad guessed that, Beard.
So good.
Yeah, Beard says, glancing back at the others. I figured you'd never guess the truth, since it was actually the Aegish Emperor.
Which is hilarious, because we know the Aegish Emperor... And it's clearly not him either. Like, we know it's not Gox, who's like a, you know, an 11, right. 12-year-old boy or whatever. It's,
yeah, right.
It's so funny. He could have picked any other leader that we don't know, but Sanderson picked one that we do know that we've met, you know? It's so awesome.
You know what, though? I so want one of his tall tales to be true.
None of them are real, I don't think.
None of them are real. I want it all real. Yeah, that's what I want. I'm not going to get it, but that's what I want. This corridor, cut through the stone, reminded Kaladin of the strata of Urithiru. They reached a trapdoor in the floor, which Azure opened with a key. A short trip down a ladder which had a dumbwaiter beside it, with ropes and pulleys, which led them to a large room with sacks of grain. I come down here every night or so, Azure says, pointing with a gloved hand, and cut out blocks with my blade. I have nightmares about the city collapsing down on us, but... I don't know of another way to get enough stone. At least, not without drawing even more attention. On the other side of the chamber, they found yet another locked door. Azure knocked twice, then opened this one, revealing a smaller room, occupied by an aged female Ardent. She knelt beside a stone block and wore a distinctive fabrile on her hand. The woman had an inhuman look to her, and she seemed to be growing vines under her skin, and they peeked out around her eyes, growing from the corners and spreading down her face like runners of ivy. It's cool, eh?
Who does this remind you of?
Windel.
Yes. And that's purposeful, I think. But it reminds me of Kaza, the soul caster who could turn things to smoke, and how after so long of using it, she started, like, she'd take her glove off and half her hand would be smoke, and part of her jaw was all smoke. So this lady is taking something and turning it into food, and so she looks like a cultivation spren.
Right.
Right? She's starting to look like Windel because of what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You are what you do.
Yeah, you are what you eat. You are what you make eat. No, wait, what?
You are what you make eat. She stood and bowed to Azure, a real soul caster.
Mm-hmm.
So Azure wasn't doing it herself. How? Kaladin asked. Why didn't the screamers come for you? Azure pointed at the sides of the room, and for the first time, Kaladin noticed the walls were covered in reflective metal plates. This wasn't steel, was it? Soon after the strangeness at the palace began, Azure said, a man pulled a chul cart up to the front of our barrack. He had these sheets of metal in the back. He was an odd fellow. I've had a few interactions with him before. Angular features, Kaladin guessed. Quick with an insult, silly and straight, somehow all at once. Well, you know him, I see. He warned us to only soul cast inside a room lined with this metal. So far as we can tell, it prevents the screamers from sensing us. Unfortunately, it also blocks span reeds from contacting the outside. Ah, so there's another...
Yeah.
So they're able to
they can't use it to communicate, but at least it muffles. Right. Yeah.
So this metal, it's not steel. So what is it? Like lead?
We don't know.
Hmm. We keep poor Ithi and her sister working nonstop. Trading off the Soulcaster, feeding the entire city would be an impossible task for the two of them. But we've been able to at least keep our army strong with some to spare. So, sorry, hang on. I want to get this clear. Are there two of them down here? I thought there was just the old there, woman.
The chapter's called Ithi and Her Sister. So there's two people who are doing the soul casting, and they keep trading. They keep putting the soul caster on the training turns so that they don't burn themselves out so quick. One with doing this much food might burn themselves out, but they're spreading off that those harmful effects of using the soul caster amongst two people.
Right. Wow. We keep poor Ithi and her sister working nonstop, trading off the Soulcaster. Feeding the entire city would be an impossible task for the two of them, but we've been able to keep our army strong with some to spare.
Yeah.
Damn. All right, Stormblessed, Azure said, I've opened our secrets to you. Now you tell me how the king could expect one man, even a Shardbearer, to be able to save this city. There's a device in Kolinar, he said, of ancient design. It can instantly transport large groups of people across great distances. He turned toward Azure and the others.
Mm-hmm.
The Kolin armies wait to join us here. All we need to do is activate the device, something that only a select few people can do. The soldiers looked stunned, but all but Azure, who perked up. Really? You're serious? Kaladin nodded. Great, let's get this thing working. Where is it? Kaladin took a deep breath. Well, that happens to be the problem.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't tell them about Radiance. He doesn't tell them about anything like that.
No.
He just says, like, you know, a very particular type of person. It's Liam Neeson. And he's got a particular type of skill that can open up oath gates. But she believes him, even though he's not telling her the full truth, because I think saying Radiance might screw things up. It might be too much. What did Shallan say earlier? It's too much. Too much. Oh, too much too for much one day.
For one
it
day.
Might be too much for one day. If he's like, oh, and by the way, I'm a Radiant, and so is Dalinar, and the king's actually in town with us, and like, and all this stuff, right? So he's just giving her enough to make it okay.
Yep.
What's your highlight of this? This tiny little
highlight
chapter?
From this little chapter. Oh boy. I'm going to say,
dramatic pause.
Dramatic pause. I'm going to say finding Ithi and her becoming
vine-like.
Like she's so like exactly.
Yeah.
Like her becoming, having the vines come out of her eyes. Like that she's been doing it so long.
Mm-hmm.
I like that bit. I also really like the fact that the storeroom was within a storeroom.
Yeah.
Like it sort of
led
to one or the other is really cool. But I think what I really want to highlight here is just its wit.
Yeah. That's my highlight.
It's how he nudges things along.
He told Shallan like chapters and chapters ago when she was like, are you here because of me?
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I'm here for another reason. And he was here to give those plates up so that they could do something to feed the city.
Right.
It's just a small thing done, right?
I know, but it's like course correction.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Wit is on a journey. And he claims that he doesn't know what he's supposed to do. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair. But he's changing history. It's like you already know the outcome and it's bad. Mm-hmm. It's really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got this character that seems to be kind of floating through this timeline, perhaps even other timelines.
Mm-hmm.
And just nudging it along. It's like time travel, or it's like it kind of reminds me of like Quantum Leap or that obscure Voyagers TV show I mm-hmm. mentioned before in the 80s, mm-hmm. where you are charged with making it such that there is a story that continues.
Right. Yeah, I've said Sam Beckett Quantum Leap before when referring to Wit, so I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I've also made a Doctor Who comparison, and I think that's apt too.
Yes.
Doctor Who doesn't really want to fuck up the timeline, but he does want to go and do little things that may or may not affect things for his benefit. And I think that's what Wit's mm-hmm. doing, because we know he's trying to do something, not maybe selfishly for himself, but he has his own goals. And clearly right now, the Kolinar people need to eat, and that's part of his goals. So
right.
Yeah.
I think a lot about Wit in that conversation that took place earlier mm-hmm. with him and Dalinar.
Yeah. That one in Way of Kings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot about that one.
Yeah, it's a really good quote. I don't have it like on hand here, but he pretty much says that
it's something like
our goals are aligned right now. And as long as they are, we're going to be good. But if they don't, I will burn the planet to the ground to get what I want. Something threatening like that. I will rain destruction here to get what I want. But
that's
for
what
now,
Wit said?
Something like that. I mean, I might be overblowing it, and I'm sure Reddit will tell me later, but it's something like that. Like he, you know, he'll see the city burn to get his goals.
I wasn't quite sure if it was like, you know, watch the world burn. But what I find fascinating about that is that so long as Dalinar is on the same page with him, mm-hmm. everything's okay. You're on an even keel. But what happens if the Blackthorn comes back? Or Dalinar is compromised, then what happens? Is that what Wit's kind of referring to? Is, you know, there could come a point where this story takes a turn
mm-hmm.
and Dalinar might become a serious problem.
Here's the quote. Here's the quote.
Oh, you found it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wit smiled. I am but a man, Dalinar. So much I wish it were not true at times. I am no Radiant. And while I am your friend, please understand that our goals do not completely align. You must not trust yourself with me. If I have to watch this world crumble and burn to get what I need, I will do so. With tears, yes, but I would let it happen. So, and then he says, I will do what I can to help, and for that reason I must go. I cannot risk too much, because if he finds me, then I become nothing. A soul shredded and broken into pieces that cannot be reassembled. What I do here is more dangerous than you can ever know. Pretty cool.
That's even weirder than what I had.
That's way weirder than what I said too. Yeah. So,
okay. So yeah, clearly. I've been probably, I think, loving Wit too much.
Maybe.
Is what I'm starting to think.
You should be more afraid of Wit. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I need to be more afraid. Well, it was funny. I had a thought. I wasn't going to share it on the pod, but I might as well do.
Mm-hmm.
When I was reading these chapters earlier, I thought, is there a chance that Wit is somewhat like the devil? You know, like Shallan is realizing, well, you know what, these illusions, veil, I don't know, like, I don't know if this is a good thing here. Like, you know, it's causing some problems. I'm having trouble keeping track. Mm-hmm. Am I running away from my problems? And then Wit kind of conveniently shows up when she's having this breakdown and kind of says, well, here's a story. Here's something to think about. Maybe you should keep picking up Vale's hat. It's all in how you look at it, mm-hmm. kid.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Accept your failures. It's almost like, you know what I mean? Like, it's so I'm admitting to you is I did have a moment earlier today.
Yeah.
Where I was thinking, like, is he some kind of devilish character?
He's definitely like manipulative. He's getting people to do what he wants. So I can see that aspect of it. He seems way more kind-hearted than what the devil would be, I would think.
Okay.
But yeah, I get what you're saying. There's like a little bit of an archetype in him like that. But let's actually get to it. Let's get to the next chapter here.
Let's do it. Okay, so our final chapter today in this batch is number 82, mm-hmm. The Girl Who Stood Up.
I love it. I think it's so great.
Yeah, this chapter alone could be a highlight of the book.
Mm-hmm. I actually recorded the spoiler warning earlier, and I said this was one of my favorite chapters of the entire series so far. It is so wow. heartfelt. It's Shallan at her most vulnerable. I love the callback yeah. to the original story, but changing it slightly yeah. for Shallan. It's just really, really great. It's awesome.
The chapter begins with, "Surely this will bring, at long last, the end to war that the heralds promised us." The heralds promised an end to the war.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be interesting? The heralds promised an end to the war in their absence.
Mm-hmm.
Brought about the end. Maybe the heralds
were one of the problems.
Well, and maybe some of them realized it. They're in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this story has to be handed off to others to accomplish. In our hands, it keeps going on.
Well, they definitely did something different this time around than last Desolation. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. I mean, if, you know, you try the same thing over and over and over again, that's the definition of insanity, right? Like, you know, they tried something different this time. So
changed
maybe they
the variable,
were thinking about
yeah.
they were thinking selfishly. They didn't want to go to damnation, but maybe it might have in written consequences of maybe some this time it'll work.
Mm-hmm. She huddled someplace. She'd forgotten where. For a while, she'd been everybody. 100 faces, cycling one after another. She searched them for comfort. Surely she could find someone who didn't hurt.
Hmm.
So this is quite the thing, isn't it? She's
yeah.
cycling through her characters. Can't I just become someone without pain?
Yeah. So sad.
But you know what? This is an interesting realization. Like, you can't escape it.
No.
You can try.
You can try.
But pain is a part of life.
Mm-hmm.
All the nearby refugees had fled, naming her a Spren. They left her with those 100 faces, in silence, until her Stormlight died off. That left only Shallan, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you know, she doesn't want to be herself. Unfortunate Shallan, the girl who flinched.
Yeah.
The girl who huddles. Darkness, a candle snuffed out, a scream cut off, with nothing to see, her mind provided images.
Hold on a second. You just said the girl who flinches, right?
Yeah.
We've said that many times.
Yeah.
Man, that's so awesome.
She flinches.
That's so awesome. Because Wit doesn't want her to be the girl who flinches. He wants her to be the girl who stood up.
Stood up.
Oh my God, I got so many goosebumps right now.
Dude.
Oh shit.
I know, dude.
That's awesome. I didn't even put those things together. Like the girl who
he wants her to stand up.
As if.
It's amazing.
Oh, geez,
it's my highlight.
That's awesome, dude. That's so awesome.
Yeah.
This story just gets me, man. It just really gets me, like, jeez. Yeah.
I know. And he planted that from the beginning.
I know. I've read the fucking book like 5 times or whatever. I never put those things together. That's really, really cool.
He wants her to stand up.
Mm-hmm. That's really
and
cool.
And he's using a story in order to help her.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
That's really awesome.
And you know why? You know why a story too, I think? Because she's still that little girl.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that's really cool.
Darkness, a candle snuffed out, a scream cut off, with nothing to see, her mind provided images of her father, his face turning purple as she strangled him, singing a lullaby. Her mother, dead with burned eyes. Tin, run through by pattern. Capsule, shaking on the floor as he succumbed to poison. Yalb, the incorrigible sailor from the wind's pleasure, dead in the depths of the sea. an unnamed coachman murdered by members of the Ghostbloods. And now Grund. His head opened up.
Quite the list.
Pretty harsh.
Mm-hmm. Kaladin isn't the only person who feels responsible for other people around him, you know?
Right.
Shallan just really takes it hard. And, I mean, I get it, but it's really harsh.
Well, Cal takes it hard because he feels very much the weight of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Shallan, it's like she doesn't know how to deal with the tragic nature of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think she's been putting on these personalities to deal with each of these things, or really just to run away from each of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Vale had tried to help these people, but had succeeded only in making their lives worse. The lie that was Vale became suddenly manifest. This is huge to mm-hmm. describe it like that. The yeah. lie that was Vale.
Yeah.
Like, that's, Shallan's never talked about her like
no,
that before.
No, exactly.
She hadn't lived on the streets, and she didn't know how to help people. Pretending to have experience didn't mean she actually did. Vale had always thought to herself that Shallan could handle the big picture. The Voidbringers and the Unmade. Now she had to confront the truth that she had no idea what to do. She couldn't get to the Oathgate. It was guarded by an ancient spren that could get inside her brain. The whole city was depending on her, but she hadn't even been able to save a little beggar boy. As she curled up on the floor, Grun's death seemed a shadow of everything else, of her good intentions turned arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
What a... Yeah, again, it's a heavy sort of set of emotions that she's trying to work through here. Again, unenviable. Everywhere she trod, death haunted her. Every face she wore was a lie to pretend that she could stop it. Couldn't she be somebody who didn't hurt just once? Light pushed shadows before it, long and slender. She blinked, momentarily transfixed. How many days had it been since she'd seen light? A figure stepped into the common room outside her little hole of a chamber. She was still in the long room Miri had lived in, and she sniffled softly. The newcomer brought his light to the doorway.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's a little clue, too.
It's really
brought
nice,
his
eh?
Light?
Yeah.
Like, maybe I've got it completely backwards. You know, Wit is not the devil.
No.
Maybe Wit is
a bringer of light.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Then carefully stepped inside and settled down across from her, his back against the wall. The room was narrow enough that his legs stretched out and touched the wall beside her. She had hers drawn up, knees against her chest, head resting on them. Wit didn't speak. He put his sphere on the floor and let her have the silence. "I should have known better," she finally whispered. "Perhaps," Wit said.
First off, just quickly, she doesn't even need to explain to him what's going on. He already knows.
Yeah. Perhaps. And she already knows that he knows.
Right. She doesn't even need to say, oh, do you
she
know about
the... She just launches into it.
Right. Yeah. So
she
good.
Already knows that he yeah. knows, yeah.
That's why he's a little bit like Q, too, right?
He is.
Mm-hmm.
Giving out so much food only drew predators. I was foolish. I should have focused on the Oathgate. Again, perhaps. It's so hard, Wit. When I wear Vale's face, I have to think like her. Seeing the larger scope grows difficult when she takes over, and I want her to take over because she's not me. There it is again,
mm-hmm.
her saying that...
She doesn't want to be herself.
It's so hard, Wit. but she needs to become Vale because she's not me. The thieves who killed that child have been seen to, Wit said, and she looked up at him. Mm-hmm. And initially when I read this, I thought, oh, are we getting Wit's retribution?
The little dangerous side?
Did Wit?
Yeah.
Like, did Wit take matters into his own hands?
It definitely feels like that when he first says it, right?
I was, for about 3 seconds, I was delightfully going, all
Wit.
Of these
oh,
images
how dare
of Wit,
you.
Like, going mad, like, going yeah. crazy, just taking matters into his own hands, yeah. using talents that we've never seen mm-hmm. from him. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it was snuffed out. But that's okay. That's what reading for the first time is all about. Mm-hmm. The thieves who had killed the child have been seen to. She looked up at him. When some of the men in the market heard what had happened, they finally formed the militia they'd been talking about. They rushed the grips, forcing them to give up the murderer and then disperse. I apologize for not acting sooner. I had been distracted by other tasks. Mm-hmm. You'll be pleased to know that some of the food you gave away was still in their base. Was it worth that boy's life? Shallan whispered. I cannot judge the worth of a life. I would not dare to attempt it. Miri said it would be better if I were dead. As I lack the experience to decide the worth of a life, I sincerely doubt that she has somehow obtained it. You tried to help the people of the market. You mostly failed. This is life. The longer you live, the more you fail. Failure is the mark of a life well lived. In turn, the only way to live without failure is to be of no use to anyone. Trust me, I've practiced. Mm-hmm. This is a highlight for me.
Yeah. This whole little conversation
is him reminding
is just awesome.
Her of a life about failure. If you haven't failed, then you've been no use to anyone. That's a pretty big thing to think about.
This paragraph, this little section here is the intro to the episode. So I've already chosen it as such. It's one of my favorite parts.
She sniffled, looking away. I have to become Vale to escape the memories, but I don't have the experience that she pretends to have. I haven't lived her life. Mm-hmm. Wow. Pretty great. Mm-hmm. No, Wit said softly. You've lived a harsher one, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. I love
wow.
that line. So good.
So good. Yet still somehow a naive one. She drew in a deep, ragged breath. She had to stop this. She knew she had to get over the tantrum and go back to the tailor's shop. She'd do it. She'd shove all this in the back of her mind with everything else she ignored. They could all fester together. This is a little highlight for me. Is she's like, you know what? I'm just going to bottle all this up too. And they're all going to hang out together and be, I'm just going to keep
yeah.
bottling up.
Yeah,
too bad.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm not going to deal with this. I'm going to just. So this is a little highlight for me.
I have literally not learned about anything.
I've just not, yeah, it reminds me of like, you know, when you're trying not to smoke or something
yeah.
and you're like, you know what, I'm just going to have this one, you know what, no, I'm going to finish this whole pack and then I'm going to go out to the store, I'm going to buy three
buy
more packs
pack.
And I'm going to smoke
yeah.
the shit out of those
yeah,
too.
Exactly.
Like it
yeah.
just, I don't know, there's something about it just reminded me of like, you can't really, you acknowledge the habit's bad.
Yeah.
But you're going to do it anyway.
Yeah,
I'm going to suppress all my feelings
me,
and
I'm
hold it all
going.
Inside
yeah.
and too bad.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I just like it. It's a story from long ago, Wit said. Oh, sorry. No, I skipped a line. She'd shove all this and she'd shove all this into her back of her mind with everything else she ignored. They could all fester together. Wit settled back. Have you heard the story of the girl who looked up? Shallan didn't reply. It's a story from long ago. Things were different in that time. A wall kept out the storms. But everyone ignored it. All but one girl who looked up one day and contemplated it. Well, why is there a wall? Shallan whispered. Oh, so you do know it. Good.
I love how her question is an honest question. And she could have not heard the story, and then she's asking about the wall, but that's also how the story goes. You know?
Right.
It's great.
He leaned down, blowing at the creme dust on the floor, and it swirled up, making a figure of a girl. It gave the brief impression of her standing before a wall, but then disintegrated back into dust. He tried again, and it swirled a little higher this time, but still fell back to dust. A little help? He asked her. He pushed a bag of spheres across the ground toward Shallan. This, I find, is him drawing her into the story more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's get you involved.
Yes, I love it. It's so great.
Yeah, it's so great.
Help me tell this story.
Definitely highlights.
Help me tell this story that you need.
Right.
Yeah.
Shallan sighed and then picked up the bag and drew in the stormlight. It started to rage within her, demanding to be used, so she stood up and breathed out. Isn't it amazing? Mm-hmm. He gets her to stand up.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Weaving it into an illusion she'd done once before. A pristine village and a young girl standing and looking upward toward an impossibly tall wall in the distance. The illusion made the room seem to vanish. Oh, I love the way this next paragraph describes this. Somehow Shallan painted the walls and ceiling in precisely the right way, making them disappear into the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the story is like transitioning the reality that they're in, and it's kind of just...
Yeah, it's taking over the whole wall. It's not just a small version. She's creating this whole landscape around them. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's all falling apart. It's turning into this story, mm-hmm. and they become a part in it.
Yeah, and I love what she says next here, or what she thinks next.
Become part of it. She hadn't made them invisible. They were merely covered up in a way that made it seem Shallan and Wit were standing in another place.
Mm-hmm.
This was more than she'd ever done before. But was she really doing it? Shallan shook her head and stepped up beside the girl who wore the long scarves.
Mm-hmm.
And Wit stepped up on the other side. He said, not bad, but it's not dark enough. What? She asks. I thought you knew the story, Wit said, tapping the air. So he's tapping the air.
Yeah.
Going like this. The color and light bled from her illusion.
Yeah.
Like he's tapping some kind of simulation or something.
Yeah, like he's making the vibrancy that she created turn dull. Like this is a darker story than you. This is the first change of your story is that actually it's much darker than that.
Yeah. Actually, sepia tones, please.
Right.
He says, in these days, there was no light. No light? Well, of course, even without light, people still had to live, didn't they? That's what people do. I hasten to guess it's the first thing they learn how to do. So they lived in the darkness. They farmed in the darkness and they ate in the darkness. I kind of like this little bit of the story. It's like a kid's story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, before there was light, people, you know, they
farmed in the dark.
Grew their food in the dark, and they did this in the dark, and they did that in the dark.
Right.
Okay. He waved behind him. People stumbled about in the village, feeling their way to different activities, barely able to see by the starlight. In this context, strange though it seemed, some pieces of the story, as she'd told it, made sense. When the girl went up to people and asked, "Why is there a wall?" it was obvious why they found it so easy to ignore. The illusion followed Wit's words as the girl in the scarves asked several people about the wall, "Well, don't go beyond it, or you shall die." And so Wit said she decided that the only way she'd find answers would be to climb the wall herself. He glanced at Shallan. Was she stupid or bold? Well, how should I know? Wrong answer. She was both. It wasn't stupid. If nobody asked questions, then we would never learn anything. Yeah, but what of the wisdom of her elders? He asks. They offered no explanation for why she shouldn't ask about the wall. No rationalization, no justification. There's a difference between listening to your elders and just being as frightened as everyone else. Ooh, it's
a little bit of a
stinger.
Yeah.
Little stinger from Shallan there on on life.
Yeah.
Listening to your elders and being as frightened as everyone else because you actually don't know the answers.
That's true.
Wit smiled, the sphere in his hand lighting his face. Funny, isn't it, how so many of our stories start the same way, but have opposing endings. In half, the child ignores her parents, wanders out into the woods, and gets eaten.
Mm-hmm.
In the other half, she discovers great wonders. But there aren't many stories about the kids who say, "Yes, I shall not go into the forest. I'm glad my parents explained that that is where the monsters live." it's very true. I think Flanders probably has a whole bookshelf of stories that are like that.
Yeah, probably.
Is that what they're trying to teach me then? Sorry, is that what you're trying to teach me then? Shallan asks. The fine distinction between choosing for yourself and ignoring good advice? I'm a terrible teacher. He waves his hand as the girl reached the wall after a long hike. Okay, first of all, I love this little self-deprecation from Wit. I'm a terrible teacher. It's one of my highlights.
Yeah. Are you trying to teach me something? No, I'm a terrible teacher.
No, I'm a terrible teacher. I love it. It's really great.
Yeah, I like this next line he says, though.
And I have to say, I'm growing more to think of Wit as David Bowie.
Yeah, I love that, too.
I don't know why.
I love that for us.
There is some Jareth in him. Like, you can't do this. I don't know. There's something about Wit that just transcends so many different things. Transcends good and evil, right and wrong.
He's got he's got other personas like Hoyd that he uses. He's like the pale white duke sometimes, and sometimes he's, you know what I mean? Like Black Star, sometimes he's, you know. I love here where he says,
Ziggy Stardust,
the girl started to climb, and he says, "Fortunately, I am an artist, not a teacher." I love that line.
Right. Yeah. I'm an artist and not a teacher.
Very much like David Bowie. I am an artist.
Very much. Yeah, I'm an artist. People learn things from art. Blasphemy, he says. Art is not art. If it has a function. Shallan rolled her eyes. "Take this fork," Wit says, waving it in his hand. Some of her stormlight split off from her, spinning above his hand, and making an image of a floating fork in the darkness. What I find interesting here, too, is that it appears that Wit can use her power.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she has power. He takes some of it and
yeah, he's able to, like, manipulate what she's doing, right? Like,
right, right. So this fork, it has a use. Eating. Now, if it were to be ornamented by a master artisan, would that change its function? No, of course not. It has the same use, ornamented or not. The art is the part that serves no purpose. Yeah, but it makes me happy, Wit. That's a purpose. He grinned. And the fork disappeared. Weren't we in the middle of a story about a girl climbing a wall? Yes, but that part takes forever. I'm finding things to occupy us.
I love that. He's like, the part where she climbs takes forever. Let's just skip that part.
Yeah.
Let's just skip.
We could just skip that, the boring part. Skip, Wit said, aghast. Skip part of a story.
Yeah, I think it's so funny.
Shallan snapped her fingers and the illusion shifted so they stood atop the wall in the darkness. The girl in the scarves, finally after toiling many days, pulled herself up beside them. "You wound me," Wit said. "What happens next?" "Well, the girl finds steps," Shallan said. And the girl realizes that the wall wasn't to keep something in, but to keep her and her people out. Because we're monsters. Wit stepped over to Shallan and then quietly folded his arms around her. And she trembled, then twisted, burying her face in his shirt. "You're not a monster, Shallan." "Oh, child, the world is monstrous at times, and there are those who would have you believe that you are terrible by association." "But I am." "No, for you see, it flows the other direction. You are not worse for your association with the world but it is better for its association with you.
Amazing.
So great.
Amazing line.
She pressed against him, shivering. What do I do, Whit?
I know
I shouldn't be in so much pain. I had to. She took a deep breath. I had to kill them. I had to. But now I've said the words, and I can't ignore it anymore. So I should just die, too, for having done it. Whit waved to the side, toward where the girl in the scarves still overlooked a new world. What was that long pack she had set down beside her? So you remember, Whit said gently, the rest of the story? It's not important. We found the moral already. The wall kept people out. But why? Because. What she had told Pattern before, when she'd been showing him this story. Because, Whit said, pointing, beyond the wall was God's light. It burst alight in a sudden explosion, a brilliant and powerful brightness that lit the landscape beyond the wall. Shallan gasped as it shone over them. The girl in the scarves gasped in turn and saw the world in all its colors for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
What I love here is Sanderson's little subtle, not even too subtle, use of the gasped for Shallan and the girl.
Yeah.
Connecting the two of them. She climbed down the steps, Shallan whispered, watching the girl run down the steps, scarves streaming behind her. She hid among the creatures who lived on this side. She sneaked up to the light and she brought it back with her to the other side, to the land of shadows. Yes, indeed, Whit said, as the scene played out. The girl in the scarves, slipping up to the grand source of light, and then breaking off a little piece in her hand. An incredible chase. The girl climbing the steps frantically, a crazed descent, and then light, for the first time in the village, followed by the coming of the storms, boiling over the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you make of this, of like the breaking off of light?
Like a piece
and
of...
And bringing it to the other side.
Of God's light, bringing it to the people.
Yeah.
It makes me think of the Spren. And like how the Spren bonded with people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Syl's like, we're a tiny piece of a god.
Right.
But I don't know if it's that necessarily... That's the moral or whatever. But I think that there's some imagery there that plays well with what Syl's told us before.
Mm-hmm. I just think it's, I don't know, there's something also interesting to think about that in order to bring light into this realm of shadows,
mm-hmm.
you ultimately had to break something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it wasn't
true.
That you just invited light in, you broke a piece
and you had to
take
it and steal it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's something about I'm not sure where this story is going to end up going with regards to the death of God, the death of honor,
mm-hmm.
the shattering of the pieces. Like,
yeah.
So I'm wondering if this story will be expanded upon.
A lot of questions.
That it's
for
not
sure.
Just as simple. Yeah. Anyway, the people suffered, Whit said, but each storm brought light renewed. Each storm brought light. For it could never be put back. Now that it had been taken. And it's like the light had never been taken. It's kind of like the fruit of the forbidden tree
mm-hmm.
story in Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
Like now that it's been taken, now that you have this knowledge or something,
mm-hmm. like people
can't be undone.
The people of Roshar they had storms, but they didn't have the storm light. They lived in darkness. And then once they stole the light, storm light, was in the storm, and now they always renewed that light with it, you know? Like, it's kind of an origin story about the Roshar, almost.
Yeah, I guess it is. For it could never be put back, now that it had been taken. And people, for all their hardship, would never choose to go back. Not now that they could see. Yeah, I guess that's the thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like once you've been shown illumination of some kind, mm-hmm. then you don't want to undo it.
No, you can't unsee.
You can't unsee. I wonder if that's the thing that we have with our species in terms of like our development, where we've taken our knowledge, let's say, mm-hmm. our technology, our progress. You can't go back because you've seen what it can do.
I would argue that, not to get too philosophical and political or whatever, but I would say that is the one of the main problems with the world right now, is that you can't go back. Once we learn to be better people, you can't go back. You have to say to yourself, you know what? I might have been a shit person before, but now that I know better, I'm going to be better.
Yeah. We can't go back.
You can't go back.
Yeah.
And there's some people who want to go back and some people who don't, or at least accept and know that we are only going forward. We cannot go backwards.
Right.
And there is like a huge fight between these groups of people who some want to go back and some don't. So.
Right.
I think, anyways, I think it's, this story is kind of apropos for it.
The illusion of this faded, leaving the two of them standing in the common room of the building. Miri's little chamber off to the side, Shallan pulled back, ashamed at having wept on his shirt. "Do you wish," Wit asked, "that you could go back to not being able to see?" "No," she whispered. "Then live, and let your failures be part of you." Man, that's amazing.
This is what we're talking about. This is what I just said, right? Yeah. You might have made mistakes in your past, and then now that you've realized that maybe the way that you conducted yourself before, or the things that you said and did before were wrong, now that you have that new understanding, you just have to live with those past failures and try to be better now.
Right.
Right?
That's it. You have to learn how to forgive yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what Shallan has to do.
And that's something that's what he gets. I think he mentions this at the end of this page here. Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
Could you go back to not being able to see, Shallan? No. Well, then live and let your failures be part of you. But that sounds an awful lot like a moral, Wit. Like you're trying to do something useful. Well, as I said, we all fail now and then. So this is funny. He turns his teaching into a failure because he's doing something useful.
Yeah, because he says, I'm not a teacher, but he's failing at not being a teacher.
Right.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's really great.
He swept his hands to his sides as if brushing something away from Shallan. Stormlight curled out from her right and left, swirling, then forming into two identical versions of Shallan. They stood with ruddy hair, mottled faces, and sweeping white coats that belonged to someone else. "Wit," she started. "Hush." He walked up to one of the illusions, inspecting it, tapping his chin with his index finger. "A lot has happened to this poor girl, hasn't it? Many people have suffered more, and they get along fine." "Fine?" he asks. Shallan shrugged, unable to banish the truths that she'd spoken. The distant memory of singing to her father as she strangled him. The people that she'd failed, the problems she'd caused, the illusion of Shallan to the left gasped, then backed up against the wall of the room, shaking her head, and she collapsed, head down, against her legs curling up. "Poor fool," Shallan whispered. "Everything she tries only makes the world worse. She was broken by her father, and then broke herself in turn. She's worthless, Wit." She gritted her teeth and found herself sneering. "It's not really her fault, but she's still worthless." Wit grunted and then pointed at the second illusion standing behind them. "What about that one?" "No different," Shallan said, tiring of this game. She gave the second illusion the same memories. Father, Helleran, failing Yasna, everything. The illusory Shallan stiffened, and then set her jaw and stood there. "Yes, I see," Wit said, strolling up to her. "No different." What are you doing to my illusions? Shallan snapped. Nothing. They're the same in every detail. Of course they're not, Shallan said, tapping the illusion, feeling it. A sense pulsed through her from it, memories and pain, and something smothering them. Forgiveness for herself.
Wow, it's so good. So nice.
Yeah, really good. She gasped, pulling her finger back as if it had been bitten. It's terrible, Wit said, stepping up beside her. To have been hurt. It's unfair and awful and horrid. But Shallan, it's okay to live on. She shook her head. Your other minds take over, he whispered, because they look so much more appealing. You'll never control them until you're confident in returning to the one who birthed them. Until you accept being you.
Isn't that amazing? You'll never truly control them unless you're happy to come back to the original.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. It's so good.
Yeah. Well, this is, you know, it's so funny how Wit is accomplishing what I've been worried about.
Mm-hmm.
For her to get some kind of control over this.
Right.
And how does she do it?
Just to forgive herself.
Forgive yourself and be the girl who stood up.
Until you accept being you.
You accept being you, yeah. You with all of your pain, you with all of your flaws and all of your failures.
Yep.
Then I'll never control it, she blinked tears. No, Wit said. He nodded toward the version of her still standing up. You will, Shallan. If you do not trust yourself, can you trust me? For in you I see a woman more wonderful than any of the lies. I promise you, that woman is worth protecting. You are worth protecting. She nodded toward the illusion of herself still standing. I can't be her. She's just another fabrication. Both illusions vanished. I only see one woman here, Wit said. I think that's a highlight for me too, Sean.
It's amazing.
I only see one woman here.
Yeah.
When she's like, she's saying, I can't be her. She's saying, I can't be her. I can't go back and be Shallan because she's just another fabrication.
Right.
So now now she's at the point of saying that Shallan.
Right. Which she said to us before, right? Because the girl who flinches is the real her. Shallan is just the one who's protecting the girl who flinches. But I'll agree. I love what Wit says.
But it's funny you said protecting because that's what he says. I promise you, that woman is worth protecting.
Right.
Here, all of these heroes are trying to protect others.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
Kaladin's whole thing is protection. His whole ideals are protection.
But these heroes, these characters need to be reminded that they also have to protect themselves.
Of course. I see only one woman here. And it's the one who is standing up.
Yeah. And it's the one who's standing up, Shallan, that has always been you. You just have to admit it and allow it. It's all right to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
He picked up his pack and then unfolded something from inside of it. Vale's hat. He pressed the hat into her palm. Shockingly, morning light was shining in the doorway. Had she been here all night, huddled in the hole of a room? Wit, I can't do it. He smiled. There are certain things I know, Shallan. This is one of them. You can. Find the balance, accept the pain, but don't accept that you deserved it. I love that too.
Mm-hmm.
Don't accept that you deserved it.
Yeah.
Pattern hummed in appreciation of that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't an as easy as Wit said. She took in a breath and felt a shiver run through her. Wit collected his things and threw his pack over his shoulder. He smiled and then stepped out into the light. Shallan released her breath, feeling foolish. She followed Wit out into the light, emerging into the market, which hadn't quite woken up yet. She didn't see Wit outside, but that was no surprise. He had a way of being where he shouldn't, but not being where you'd expect. Carrying Vale's hat, she walked the street, feeling odd to herself in trousers and coat. Red hair, but a safe hand glove. Should she hide? Why? This felt fine. She walked all the way back to the tailor's shop and peeked in. Adolin sat at a table inside, bleary-eyed. He stood upright. Shallan, we were worried. Vatha said you should have come back. He embraced her. And she relaxed into him. She felt better. Not well yet. It was all still there, but something about Wit's words. I see only one woman here. The one who is standing up.
Yeah.
Dude.
Like, so good.
Honestly, this chapter is amazing.
It's really good.
Adolin still held her for a time, as if he needed to reassure himself. I know you're fine, of course. I mean, you're basically unkillable, right? Finally, he pulled back, still holding her shoulders, and looked down at her outfit. Should she explain? Nice, Adolin said. Shallan, that's sharp. The red on white? He stepped back, nodding. Did Yaxa make that for you? Let me see that on you. Or, sorry, let me see the hat on you. Oh, Adolin, she thought, pulling the hat on the hat. The jacket is a hair too loose, Adolin says, but the style is a really good match. Bold and crisp. He cocked his head. Would look better with a sword at your waist. Maybe. He trailed off. Do you hear that? She turned, frowning. It sounded like marching. A parade this early? They looked out in the street and found Kaladin approaching, with an army of 500 or 600 men wearing uniforms of the Wall Guard. Adolin sighed softly. Of course. He's probably their leader now or something. Storming Bridge Boy. I love this.
Amazing.
I love that the chapter ends with this bit of levity, yeah, and Adolin, like, holding her. I love it. It's amazing. And then, of course, holding her and then realizing, wow, like, what are you wearing? This is great.
You look good in
that. So that, then you hear this marching and then this comment. Like, dude, it's amazing. Storming Bridge Boy. She and Adolin stepped out to meet him, and she heard Elokar scrambling down the steps inside, shouting at what he'd apparently seen out the window. Kaladin was speaking softly with a woman in armor, helm under her arm, face crossed by a pair of scars. High Marshal Azure was younger than Shallan had expected. And that's my little highlight from what I said earlier, that where Shallan was going to comment on Azure because, you know, she's like, oh, she's younger. Like,
oh,
because she's with Kaladin.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So she's like, so she's kind of like,
oh, she's younger than I expected. Oh, and they're close.
Yeah, and she's with, and they're close. And maybe I don't like that. Or maybe there's a part of me that doesn't like that. Yeah. I know. I just love it. Yeah. It's just a little thing. Okay. The soldiers grew hushed as they saw Adolin, then the king, who was already dressed. So that's what you meant, Azure said to Kaladin. Stormblessed, Elokar asked, what is this? You've been wanting an army to attack the palace, your majesty, Kaladin said. Well, we're ready.
Awesome.
Incredible chapter.
Yeah, it's an incredible chapter. I don't even
highlights,
think I'm gonna.
Dude,
I'm not even.
There's
gonna be able
so
to
many
pick
highlights.
Highlight.
I don't even know what this.
Yeah, same. I'm the
What's
same
that?
Way. I can't even pick a highlight for this because the entire chapter is just incredible.
It's a highlight.
Yeah. So we're gonna say it's just the chapter itself. Maybe the title.
The whole chapter.
The girl who stood up is the
Everything.
Highlight. Yeah. It's really great.
The girl who stood up, like him teaching her this lesson. And she comes out of it not perfect, but she comes out of it thinking about it. She's thinking about it. I see only one woman here.
Yeah.
The girl who stood up.
I think my highlight actually is earlier when I realized that the girl who flinches, the girl who stood up, like I just, it's perfect. It's just, it really caught me off guard there. Like I don't think I saw that before. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Well, that's my highlight is the two of us unearthing that together.
I love that. That's always my favorite part of the pod is when we find something new that I've never seen or that you didn't even catch when you first read it and we kind of discover it together.
I didn't ruminate. I love it. I love the fact that it, and You know, it's funny when I thought about it with who she is, mm-hmm. and you've been the one. The only reason why I was thinking about Shallan being the one, the girl who flinches, is because you've been reminding me of that mm-hmm. since day one.
Yeah.
And so when I read it, and I thought, okay, well, that's kind of dichotomous. But when you sort of ruminated and stopped on it, it was more heartfelt.
Right. I think I'm bringing it up
because... I hadn't quite let it in.
I haven't really been bringing it up for this moment. I've been reminding us about it because it's also another, and I'm going to use it in quotes here, personality that Shallan gives yeah. to herself. And yep. That it, you know, makes, because that one time she said, you know, Shallan's not even the real person. You know what I mean? Right. She's a disguise too, kind of thing. So right. I was bringing it up because we were always heading in this place where she's got all these different personalities. And mm-hmm. that's like one of the first mentions of something like that early on. So that's why I kept bringing it up, not really thinking of the grammar of it and how it mirrors this chapter's title
right.
in this story, right? Right? Like, and I've always loved this chapter, but I've never put those two lines together. It's just, it's really, right. really poetic. You know who else is poetic? Buzzkill Joe. Let's do a quick info dump here before...
With an info dump.
It is late. We normally record in the morning, and we are doing a later night pod here, so let's do this quickly mm-hmm. so we can get to bed. Chapter 79, Echoes of Thunder. Vardanar is a squad leader on the Wall Guard. There are a lot of colorful metaphors here that Azure uses. I'm missing something like white on black. I bet my red life.
Right.
There's also another character right, who does life. Use a yeah. lot of red of color metaphors, and I don't necessarily want to tell you who it is. I guess I can.
Oh.
Zael also uses some color metaphors. He says, "But boy, you've got red on your ears like I've never seen." And then he'll say, "Don't be green from the ground," like stuff like that. So
right.
there's there's some similarities there in the language.
So some connection between Zael and Azure.
Maybe. Azure's blade is she unsheathed her shard blade, glittering long and silvery, and it seemed like the fused were afraid of it for some reason, which is right. really, really neat. The fused gem heart is a weakness in fighting them, which is awesome to discover. And then one thing in here that I didn't know until we just read the info dump here is you asked earlier about Malishi, and I had forgotten this. Malishi is a bondsmith who is mentioned in the Words of Radiance book that Shallan gets in book two. She gets that book in the world called Words of Radiance, and she finds mm-hmm. out about a bondsmith from a long time ago named Malishi. And these epigraphs tell us that in order to be able to trap right. an unmade in a gemstone, you would need a very specific type of gemstone to be the prison and Malishi. So
a bondsmith to
do it. Yeah. So they're pretty wow. cool. The next chapter is chapter 80, which is Oblivious, which is an awesome little chapter, too. Ty is one of Grun's friends who were killed by the Gripes. Remember earlier in the book, he's like, oh, they moved away?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't move away. The Gripes had killed them, and so Grund had been lying to Vale that whole time. The Grips right. are a gang that's in charge of that part of Kolinar. It's just a really sad chapter. The next chapter is Ithi and her sister. Battalion Lord Hadnar was a stocky, bejowled fellow, and he was one of Azure's primary officers. Ithi was the woman who started to look like she had vines, and her sister probably had also a similar look. We obviously remember Kaza, who was turning into smoke, and these ladies are literally sacrificing themselves to provide food for the city, which is really, really cool. There seems to be a mystery metal, reflective metal that prevents screamers from sensing fabrials used in a room lined with it. We don't know. It can't be steel because that's very common. We don't find out what kind of metal this is. Maybe it's mithril. I'm just, I just wanted to say
it seems like lead.
It
like,
could
like
be
something
lead.
That's dull
yeah.
and like,
it could be totally lead. I think you're right when you said that earlier, but, we don't have any kind of,
right.
confirmation on that. Chapter 82, last one we covered, The Girl Who Stood Up, amazing, one of my favorite chapters. The gang seemed to be dispersed by a newly formed militia that, you said this before, this was like an unintended silver lining in the whole thing that after Gren died and these people decided to form a militia to actually go and deal with the gripes. So that's kind of nice, but not really great. So, yeah, so that's the info dump. Thank you so much to Buzzkill Joe for doing all the hard work on it. I take all the glory, and you have to do the work. So it's amazing. it's such a good deal that we've worked out here. So, yeah, we are going to just quickly say our goodbyes here. Jack, we have a nice surprise coming up. The next chapter is you have to read one chapter, so chapter 83.
Okay.
And then 84 will be a live read. And
oh,
I'm
going to
do something kind of special for this one. I've prepped notes for 83, but I'm prepping no notes for the live read for myself. So I am going to go in to it a little unbeknownst as well. I know what happens, but I'm not going to read it
right
before so that I'm kind of a little forgetful about things so I can have a little bit of a reaction as well. So yeah, that'll be the next episode. So hopefully everyone will be able to come on to Discord with us.
Do we have that one booked?
We are going to. You and I are going to have to talk about it because it's over the Thanksgiving weekend here in Canada. So hopefully we'll be able to do it on Thanksgiving Monday. Well, we'll talk more about that.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Okay.
So, so thank you very much, everyone, for listening. If you want to be able to get in on the fun, like live reads and Discord chats and all this kind of stuff, go to patreon.com/heroesof and become part of the Patreon team. There's all kinds of fun goodies. Go check out the site. If you want to reach out to us and tell us that we're wrong about things or right about things, which is very rare... you can do so at heroesofcathra@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Reddit, the subreddit. You can hit us up on the Facebook page. You can find us on Threads, and you can find us on Instagram at the StormPod.
Threads.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know,
weaving the threads,
trying to
crocheting.
Oh, look at you,
crocheting.
Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We really appreciate you. We really love you. Until next time.
Take care, everybody.
The Storm Pod is brought to you by Heroes of. Music and theme song by Jack Forrest Productions. Additional music by Jason Moray. Produced by our wonderful Patreon team and the Heroes of Akathra.